asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances.
So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today, we're answering your listener questions.
Listen to you having the perfectly healthy voice.
I'm back, baby.
It was a process, right? But I feel like we can kick things off this week with 100% Joel.
My voice is feeling like your hair is looking. I'll tell you that.
My hair looking fresh.
It's like an extra inch tall today. You know, Matt,
it's getting a little bit longer.
You use the hair gel and you just...
You're looking spiffy. I use hair glue.
Literally,
it's like the consistency of Elmer's glue.
You just put hot glue in your hair.
Have to melt it off. Now, this is an Ask How to Money episode. We've got some fantastic personal finance topics, questions to get to today, man. We have a question from a listener. He's wondering what the best credit card that he and his soon-to-be wife should consider for their honeymoon. Another listener is wondering whether or not they should be paying off their mortgage early. And we're going to also tackle whether or not it makes sense to buy a used car from a car rental agency.
Ooh. Yeah. There's trade-offs involved in that.
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. But we'll get to that one, plus other content during this episode.
For sure.
Buddy. All right,
before we get to that, I just want to quickly mention, we always like to have just like something to talk about at the beginning of the show. And I saw our friend Jeff, Matt, who we've met at FinCon before, he goes by the moniker Homo Money. And Jeff's doing just great work over there, man. If you're looking for people to follow on Instagram, Matt and I, we post static stuff, but Jeff's like interacting with his audience a lot more. We just don't do the socials very well, and it's kind of on purpose, let's be honest.
Yeah, I don't want to.
We just kind of avoid it.
I like the podcast. I like what it is we do.
So much more fun than social media would be drudgery if we got into it. We've tried it before, and we were just like, eh. We don't care enough. But Jeff, on the other hand, does pretty good on that front, and I think he actually likes it. And one of the things, he had this great tip that I hadn't really thought much about because it's just not the way my brain works, but he was talking about how he has this like Patagonia jacket. And
ooh, it got my attention.
Yeah.
I too. Those are I'm a fan of the Patagonia.
Those are expensive jackets, but you know those down jackets. Like you get a hole in the sleeve, the stuffing starts falling out.
Not the most durable at times.
But they're great and they're super warm and you can pack them up pretty tight too.
Yeah.
And so he was talking about how there are these patches you can get. You just stick on the hole.
Oh, cool.
And guess what?
Like a sticker?
Yeah, pretty much.
Like literally
super
that's cool.
Easy. Super easy.
Oh.
And so it just like massively lengthens the life of your jacket and it brings down. What he said was the cost per wear, which I think is just a good way to think about your clothing in general, right?
Like, I love it.
And that's why you and I think are more okay spending more money on quality items that we think we're going to wear for years and years and years. I've really changed my tune on this. I used to be all about like, I'll buy that $14 pair of jeans, but
$14, no. Please. You're dropping like $10 for a pair of jeans.
But then I ended up finding, oh, wait, they're misshapen really quickly. I don't like the way they fit. And so I didn't really wear them. And so my cost
didn't quite
wear,
have the whiskering that you were looking for out of your nicer jeans.
Right, yeah. And so I'm like, all right, cool. I'm willing to spend more now to get the thing that I'm actually, especially like on a pair of jeans where I'm wearing jeans I don't know, 358 days a year or something like that. Like, I will buy the nice ones because I wear them all the time. And I like that. Yeah, the thinking about your items and cost per wear and thinking about how to extend the life of those quality items too. It's just smart.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. I haven't checked those out. I'll need to, because the ability to just slap a sticker on it, I assume it's like some sort of high quality epoxy, you know, like something where it's not coming off, because the idea
it's not
of,
like the sticker you get from the doctor's
office. Yeah. The idea of trying to sew, have you ever done any sewing to try to repair
no
anything?
My mom's helped me out on that front before, like putting a button back on, something like that.
That's what moms are, that's are right. great for.
I never learned the skill though.
We haven't either. We have a sewing machine at home, but at some point I think I'm going to figure it out. But I have not taken on any sewing projects. Although Instagram, speaking of social media, they've been feeding me. I don't know why I've been getting an influx of like Red Wing influencers, like Red Wing boots.
Okay.
And there are these guys that find like these old boots from like decades ago, and they're like restoring them and resoling them, and they just show the whole process.
It is
the coolest thing, and it definitely kind of lends itself to what you're saying: quality over quantity, right?
Yeah.
And like when you have something that is made to be repaired, it is something that you can revisit and rewear and resole and use for generations.
And it's a money saver, but also feels good. Like, I think it feels so nice to be like, you know what, this is something
like, feels
I might
good
have
from like
out.
A conscience standpoint.
Yeah,
in the earth. Yeah,
it's it saves you money, but it also
and actually literally feels better, I think, too, because that leather's all broken in.
Right.
You don't have to.
That's true. Like some of my best items, it's like they get that patina on them, and that's when I like them the most.
Yeah, exactly. All right, we are actually going to get to questions, but first let's introduce the beer that you and I are drinking during this episode. This is a Nelson, and I'm assuming it's going to be made from Nelson hops, but we'll share our thoughts on this beer. This is a beer by Piedmont Brewery, but we'll share our thoughts at the end of the episode.
For sure. All right, let's get on to listener questions. Matt, if you have a money question you want Matt and I to tackle, we'd love to hear it. It's super easy to get that question our way. Just go to howtomoney.com/ask. Basically, you're just recording a voice memo on your phone, sending it to us via email, and hopefully we'll take it on the next Ask HTM episode. And Matt, let's get to this first listener question. This one comes from a listener, and her family just experienced an unexpected income loss.
Hi, Matt and Joel. My name is Emma Lang, and I live in Stony Point, New York. I've been tuning into your podcast for a few months now, and I wanted to share my current situation for your insights. I work in the field of environmental technology and co-own a startup focused on sustainable solutions. My partner has generously funded the entire venture from inception. Now, we've began meeting with VCs for round two funding to launch a marketing campaign and propel the company into revenue generation. Once we secure a partnership, I'll be able to draw salary from my company, but there's no way for me to predict exactly when that will happen. My spouse, previously employed as a software engineer, is currently job hunting. Before diving into entrepreneurship, my annual income ranged from $120,000 to $200,000, similar to my husband's earnings. We acquired a house a few years back when job security was higher, and our financial landscape has since shifted. With a $400,000 mortgage and an additional $200,000 HELOC in New York, where foreclosure is a prolonged process, we're not facing eviction immediately, but I aim to avoid it altogether, especially since we have two children. My husband is actively seeking new employment, but the uncertainty has left me grappling with chronic anxiety. We have approximately $100,000 in savings, and we both have credit scores of 750 to 800. So I'm exploring creative ways to utilize our savings safely, specifically to address our HELOC. Any guidance you can provide me with would be greatly appreciated, and I look forward to listening to your response on the podcast. Thank you.
All right, Emma, thank you so much for sending your question in. And first off, we're so sorry about the anxiety that you're feeling. It seems like, as we're listening to your question, you shared a bunch of details and a bunch of facts about your situation, but it sounded like it got real when you're talking about how this is impacting you from an emotional standpoint, and that seems to be maybe what's at the core of your question here.
And we know that to be true, Matt, from so many years of doing this, that it's, a terrible financial situation or being kind of behind the eight ball, it just leads to all these other problems in your life, and it's often it's the way that it messes with your psyche that can be the hardest part to overcome.
Exactly. Yeah. And wanted to address too, in your case, you've got a startup here that you've been a part of. They can be risky, but there's also potentially a really great reward waiting for you after years of hard work. I think that's one of the reasons why people tend to take that risk, right? To pursue something that they're passionate about, certainly, yeah. But then also to have the potential for outsized gains is awesome. And in a situation like yours where like you've got a husband and it makes sense to have a partner or a spouse with a traditional job, when you have some of these, some of this financial uncertainty
when you're
that might be lying ahead.
When you're foregoing a paycheck for potentially multiple years, it's like the steady paycheck is helpful.
And it sounds like that was your situation, but then he lost his job. It's something that you can't predict. But I just wanted to say that I wouldn't beat myself up if I were you, because you didn't, it's not like you went out and made a like a boneheaded decision. And in particular, you had a significant amount of savings set aside as well. And so the fact that you were in that position where you had that financial margin, you had that emergency fund on hand, made it sound like that is exactly maybe the steps. That's what I would have done if I was interested in pursuing a startup like you are.
But just because you made the right choice on the front end doesn't mean difficult, unpredictable things can't happen. And so I guess it's important to note that raking yourself over the coals for this and making it seem like trying to kind of throw yourself under the bus, which I think can sometimes, like, there's like a psychological aspect to that too, Matt, where it feels like you're making progress, but the reality is you're not, and it's not helpful to moving forward, like with kind of the current facts on the ground. And it sounds like this is, at least hopefully, a temporary hurdle, right? Your husband is looking for a job. You at some point are going to start drawing a salary. So I would say let's hope that one or both happen sooner rather than later. And I get why the HELOC is on your radar. You mentioned that, especially as interest rates have risen, right? Paying off HELOC debt is way more important now than it was just 2 years ago when your HELOC is sitting there at 3.25% or something like that. You're like, ah, not that big of a deal. I can just pay as agreed. But right now, like if your HELOC rate is up in the sevens, it certainly feels like you got to make progress on it more quickly. But the one thing you've got going for you right now, Emma, is your strong cash position. And I just would encourage you not to do anything to jeopardize that, especially given kind of the contours of your situation. I would be making the minimum payments on your debt obligations, including that HELOC. And that wouldn't be our normal advice. Normally, we would want you to be, like I said, like that should be a debt that you're more keen to pay off more quickly.
Probably a top priority in her life.
But these aren't normal times that you're experiencing here. And the truth is, the whole reason you set aside a big chunk of money is for unexpected hardships like you're experiencing. So using that, leaning on that, and not expending it too quickly, even in debt payoff service, is wise, I think, for this current place where you find yourself.
Yeah, what's interesting, it is curious that she seems to be focusing on the HELOC, but in reality, that is not, like in our minds, that isn't the focus. And I think it can be difficult. Certainly it's difficult financially, but I think for her, it could potentially be difficult from like a mental standpoint or from an emotional standpoint, because she might be saying to herself, well, I always like pay all my debts like above and beyond. Of course, I'm going to eliminate this as quickly as possible. And so it can be difficult to, like, there's a sense of identity that's tied up with that, right? Where it's just like, well, I never make late payments or I never carry a balance.
Well, but we don't want her to make late payments, but
not late payments. Yeah, I guess even when it comes to like credit card debt, right? So like the way someone might use a credit card, they might say, well, I use it to gain some of the different benefits and some of the different rewards. And while that's the case, when you find yourself in a situation like this, you don't necessarily want to get rid of all that liquidity in order to make sure that you are up to date when it comes to your payments.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, eventually, in the hopefully not too distant future, having no HELOC debt is a great goal. But in the here and now, funneling more money in that direction could leave you in a worse financial position.
Exactly, even more hardship. Yeah, that the fact that cash is there, like you've got $100K basically in the bank, and it is there to help you to get through the unknown number of months that this difficult situation might persist. And as a way to stretch each single dollar, this is a great time, honestly, to create and to implement a bare bones budget. And I know it can be tough to cut back, especially if that means changing things up for the kiddos, like not signing up for soccer or different activities.
That'd be like $300 a semester or something like that. And you might have to say, listen, for right now, soccer's out the window.
Yeah. So just keep in mind that that might be necessary in order to keep, in order to maintain more stability at home. You might need to start making some of these smaller changes a little more proactively. And we'll actually link to an article all about bare bones budgets in the show notes for this episode. But essentially what we're talking about here is like maybe not eating out for a while. It means like canceling some of your streaming services, vacations, new clothes, or at least money that you were setting aside for those off in the future. We're going to set that on the back burner. Mm-hmm. So basically, whatever isn't completely necessary needs to be eradicated. It kind of makes me think of, I don't even know if computers still do this today, but like back in the Windows era, or back when I used to have a PC, like if something was wrong with your computer, it would like boot up in safe mode, where it would allow you to do a few of the critical functions that the computer needed to do, but it eliminated all the fancy graphics and things. It was very pixelated. I can't remember exactly how it looked, but I just remember it not working like it's
other things
to.
Were off limits.
Yeah, exactly. Like a more modern day example is like if your phone is on low battery and it's like, would you like to switch to low battery, low power mode or whatever? Yeah. And it's like, okay, it's going to dim the brightness of the screen. It's going to turn off some of your location services, all so that you can, at the very least, make a call or make a text for someone to come pick you up if you're stranded.
Use your phone for the most urgent potential tasks.
Exactly. Not like to use your flashlight because you just want to see something. Or
yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's a really good analogy. And so I get like the bare bones budget is something that we want most people or all of our listeners really to have thought out and then hopefully not have to implement. But Emma's in the position where hopefully you've already got it in hand. If you don't, it's time to create one and then implement it. Mm-hmm. And it's not because we're trying to kill your fun. That's not what this is about. It's actually really there to put you in a position of control, which will hopefully reduce your anxiety levels. Like actually taking action, making some progress, and kind of harnessing that budget in a way that's going to help extend the life of the savings that you have is going to put you in a position where you're making progress, right? You're making strides.
Yeah, just like low battery mode on your phone extends the life of your battery.
That's right.
Until you're able to plug it in.
Exactly. And so instead of letting those activities, the current expenses, dictate where you're headed, you're putting the reins back in your hands. And no one ever wants to put the bare bones budget in motion, but it's there for emergencies like this. Like nobody's like, bare bones budget, that sounds like fun, let's do that in perpetuity. That's not the goal of it. It really is to get you through a trying time like you're currently in, and it can really slow the bleeding enough to make a massive emergency feel far less threatening. And so we think that's going to be the case for you. It's all about surviving right now until your husband gets a job or you start getting paid. And then, like, let's say your husband lands a job 3 weeks from now, well, you can dial back on the bare bones budget. It doesn't have to be there for the next 2 years.
Exactly. Like you can, in my mind, immediately revert back to your normal spending once you've got that job lined up. But the fact is,
and then you can start to prioritize the HELOC too.
Yes, like,
but
exactly.
Right now, now's not the time.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, yeah. Once you're both getting paid, you can start to make that HELOC a really high priority, funneling large amounts of money towards it every single month. And that's when you'll be able to like replenish some of the cash that you also use during this emergency situation as well. But just remember, like you've done a great job saving money, and the goal right now is just to stretch each single dollar until you've got an income. Ideally, multiple income spigots turned back on in your life. And I know that's not easy, but yeah, focus on what it is that you can control right now. We think that you've got this. And I'm also glad to hear that you said your husband he's actively searching for a job, and you've got multiple months worth of living expenses set aside. But it's also worth keeping in mind that at a certain point, he might be needing to take a job that isn't necessarily the best job for his career, right? Yeah. Like maybe it's, oh man, this is actually, I'm taking a pay cut by taking this job versus the job I used to have. Well, the key word here is that he used to have that job. You don't have that job anymore. It's not like we're moving from one job where you're currently employed to another one that might be better. And
if you need income, sometimes you have to, those trade-offs are required.
Yeah, at a certain point, you got to start making some hard decisions. And not only for him, but also I think for you, it sounds like you are really passionate and excited about the startup. It sounds like y'all are making serious progress. But at a certain point, you have to weigh the pros and the cons and think, okay, is this worth instability at home? What does this mean for my family? What does this mean for the kids? And it's not even black or white, right? Maybe it even means, hey, is there any way I can be less involved in the startup, still maintain maybe some sort of equity position, but that it frees up my time to be able to go back to earning, she said, which, like 120 to 200K a year? I mean, that's an incredible salary with a typical 9-to-5 with a W-2 job that you left behind. So the ability to go back to something like that, just keep that in mind as well. At a certain point, hopefully you won't get to this point, but at a certain point, you might have to make some of those tough decisions.
Every like founder story you read, Matt, it seems like there was at least one, if not like 10 pivot points where things were, the finances were hitting the fan, right? Mm-hmm. And so, like, I don't know, I'm like reading Sam Walton's autobiography right now, the guy who started Walmart, and I'm like so fascinated by these moments in time where everything is like hanging on the edge and things almost completely fall apart. And so if you're passionate about what you do, if you like know and are incredibly skilled at the thing you're trying to develop, and you see light at the end of the tunnel, it's really tough to give up on that. Mm-hmm. And so you want to do whatever it takes to kind of get through this time. And so I think that's what the bare bones budget can be. And I think you're right. At some point, her spouse might have to take like a job that pays less than that is ideal, or maybe it's not on the career trajectory he was hoping for in order to help make ends meet from a month-to-month perspective if you want to keep this dream alive, because there could be a lot of just personal reward and then a lot of also financial reward at the end of the day from this startup taking off. So
yeah, it doesn't necessarily have to be a career building, resume building job that he takes.
Right.
Sometimes it means just like, okay, we're done with unemployment. Like, how can we start earning some money
and
to start stymieing the bleeding?
He's stuck there for years to come either, right? You can take that job and then keep looking, keep networking, and find something 6 months, 8 months, a year down the road that maybe is more in line with what you were wanting in that initial job search.
That's right. Yeah. So Emma, we hope that gets you pointed in the right direction. Even though we didn't directly address your question, hopefully we were able to get you thinking about this in a way that's hopefully a little more helpful. But Joel, we've got more to get to, including we're going to talk about making biweekly payments on a mortgage. We'll get to that plus more right after this.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
All right, Matt, we're back. Now we're going to talk about honeymoons. Your honeymoon actually got derailed, didn't it?
It did.
You're supposed to go to Jamaica.
A hurricane took it out.
Yeah. So at my honeymoon, I had a free place to stay thanks to my boss. So that was kind of nice. That really cut down on the cost. But we've got a listener who's wondering, well, can I use credit cards actually to help curb the cost of my honeymoon?
Hey, Matt and Joel. Thanks for all the great financial advice you give. I'm getting married next summer and had a few questions on how to best use credit card rewards for a honeymoon. For a little background, my partner and I both have 800-plus credit scores, are both in Money Gear 7, and currently have a 2% cashback credit card. Our wedding has been properly budgeted for, and we are doing the reception at a restaurant, which will be about $20,000. We would both be willing to take out one new credit card each to pay for the wedding and take advantage of rewards for flights, hotels, or just cashback. Annual fees are fine, as we would likely cancel the card after 1 year. I've looked at your credit card tool, and it seems that maybe the Chase Sapphire Preferred or the Capital One Venture cards would be best, but would love to hear your thoughts. Thanks so much.
All right, Dennis, congrats on the upcoming wedding. We're pumped for you. And by the way, I think he said a $20,000 cost, which I will say was specifically for the reception at a restaurant. So if that's the bulk of the cost, that's actually a little better than average. I think the average today is $35,000. So if you're getting married somewhere, let's say at a park, and it's virtually free, and then dropping $20,000 at a restaurant, which sounds like never an amount of money that I want to spend at a restaurant, but big picture, that's actually pretty dang good.
I'm kind of two minds of this, because I think like you want to save money on the wedding, but at the same time, it's like this, it can be this super massive fun party. You don't have to spend an arm and a leg in order to have the massively fun party with your friends and family, though. So that kind of balance, I think, makes sense when you're approaching a wedding. You also don't want to like underspend, not invite people that you would have liked to have there,
sure,
in an attempt to save a few bucks, because that's a really memorable day.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so we are glad to hear, though, that you've gotten familiar with the credit card tool. This is an easy way to see what credit cards make the most sense for you. And by the way, the cards that you mentioned, they're truly two of the best travel cards for most people to consider. You've got the Capital One Venture X card. You've got the Chase Sapphire Preferred. They both offer the most robust rewards. They offer the best secondary benefits for just the minimal annual fee.
Yeah, and you mentioned secondary benefits. We should just mention, like, what does that mean? Well, lots of times it means, like, 0% foreign transaction fees. Mm-hmm. That's one of those that actually a lot of cards have now. But, like, for
primary instance, car rental insurance.
Yeah, that's the another, Chase Sapphire Preferred.
Especially if you're looking at a whole lot of travel where you're not just relaxing on the beach, but actually traveling around, which requires you renting a vehicle,
especially if you're traveling to Europe or something like that, and not having to, I mean, that adds up, really, the insurance that you pay directly to the rental car company. You can decline it with peace of mind, knowing that you booked it with
the CSP.
Decline it,
taking the risk, knowing that were something to happen, that you're going to be covering that with your own policy. But Capital One, the Venture X, and the Chase Sapphire Preferred both have that primary rental. But then, that being said, for everyone else, like, please check out the rundown there. Like, head over to howtomoney.com/creditcardtool, and you can see what each of these cards offer, you can narrow it down as well by the different airline, say you're looking to score points with.
If you want one of those airline specific cards.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And so the sign up bonuses, they're typically neck and neck on these two as well. Both have similar redemption portals that are fairly user friendly. You really can't go wrong with either one of these. A lot of it, I think, kind of comes down to personal preference.
Yeah. And I like how Dennis is kind of, he's saying, oh, we're going to do a single card, each of us, that this is kind of how we're going to skin the cat. And it sounds like you're trying to keep it simple and not get too far over your skis, which is wise. I think some people, they hear about like using credit cards to get points so they can travel for free or cheap. And sometimes people overdo it, Matt. they sign up for four at a time. They don't meet the spending threshold. And so they fall short maybe of being able to get some of the bonus miles or points that they can get. And they also find that their spending gets out of hand maybe in an attempt to get as many sign-up bonuses as possible. So I would say, yes, keep it manageable in the beginning. That is the best way to start. And you can always add complexity to your travel hacking down the road. You can, like, at some point in the future, when you feel like you know what you're doing, you can maybe open two credit cards at the same time, working towards those spends, because you know what bills are upcoming in your life, and you know you're going to easily be able to meet that threshold without like spending extra that you wouldn't have otherwise done. Because that's the way you're shooting yourself in the foot, and a lot of people end up shooting themselves in the foot is by spending more than they should in an attempt to maximize credit card benefits.
Yeah, I think wading into those waters makes a whole lot of sense, especially considering he mentioned how it sounds like he's coming from a 2% cashback background.
Yeah.
Basically, he's got a single card. It always pays 2%.
It's a solid place to start.
But then the ability to add that complexity over time as you get used to it and know what's how it works, basically.
Yeah. And I think this also allows you to experiment, Dennis, like with both of these cards, maybe, and see which platform you preferred. Because if you're opening one, your significant other is opening one as well. Maybe you open the Chase Sapphire Preferred and your soon-to-be spouse opens up the Capital One Venture X.
That's right.
And you're racking up points.
Left and right.
Yeah. Well, and I think another important thing to mention is that not to add each other as an authorized user on your own card. Because in the future, if you do want to open up a second card, Well, you can flip-flop, you know, and you open the Chase Sapphire Preferred. Well, next, you open up the Capital One Venture X and vice versa. And that is what's going to allow you to maximize the sign-up bonuses, maximize those points earnings. But when you add each other as an authorized user, you forego the ability to do that.
Yeah, there is benefit, but it's a minimal benefit that you receive. It's like the difference between, I don't know, like 100,000 points versus 10,000 points. Because it's like, yeah, they're always touting like, hey, add an authorized user. And there is a benefit. It's just not nearly as much where your partner to go out and get the card themselves.
Yep.
That being said, we're talking about keeping things simple. However, another card or strategy worth considering is the Southwest Companion Pass that we've talked about here on the show.
Especially, I mean, if Southwest flies to the airport that's closest to you, right? If that's easy and they're flying to most of the destinations you want to go.
Yeah, airfare is oftentimes the major expense when it comes to traveling and when it comes to going on a honeymoon and getting a Southwest card and jumping through some of the hoops in order to score that Companion Pass. That can be the best bang for your buck from a new credit card perspective. And the cool thing is, once you get the Companion Pass, not only are we talking about booking that honeymoon flight with points that you've earned and a free flight for your companion, but you can then do the same on your other upcoming trips for the rest of the year and then next year as well. The way the Companion Pass works is the year in which you get it, you not only get free travel for the rest of that year, but also the following year. It's kind of the gift that keeps on giving. And we've got an article up on the site that explains how it is that you can most quickly earn that Companion Pass. And by the way, too, I want to make an argument for Southwest, because I think there might be some folks who hear us talking about Southwest and they're like, boo, you can't go anywhere cool with Southwest. That's not the case.
Not true.
You can, the entire Caribbean basically
Cancun, baby. Hawaii.
Cancun, you can go to Jamaica. Speaking of Jamaica, you can go to Jamaica. You can go to like Aruba. You can go to the Cayman Islands.
Yeah.
There are a lot of great...
Which is where I have most of my bank accounts.
But there's just a lot of cool places that you can go, a lot of warm places. And here's another part of it, too. I'm going to continue to make an argument for flying Southwest, because you might be saying, well, no, we want to go to Europe. We want to do the European honeymoon vacation thing. Well, something to keep in mind is that I don't know how much you and your soon-to-be spouse have traveled together, but I feel like there's a learning curve when it comes to learning figuring out how it is that the other person likes to travel, and I think it can make a lot of sense to figure that out on the cheap.
Yeah.
Maybe, like, say, and I'm speaking from personal experience, because like when Kate and I traveled early on, like we would have a lot of fun, but I don't know. I feel like it was several trips in before we felt like we would really get into the groove of knowing, we want to make sure we always stay at least 2 nights anywhere we stay if we're traveling around Europe.
We always play disc golf wherever we go.
you and your wife? No, like literally, what activities do we want to participate in? Like, these are all good things to learn. So why not learn those on the cheap, maybe while you're traveling domestically, as opposed to a really expensive initial education in how the other person likes to travel.
And so, I don't want to.
All that being said, I think there are a lot of great options with Southwest.
I don't want to like oversell Southwest, but Southwest, they make it pretty easy to redeem those points, and it's like less of an endeavor like it is with some of the other airlines. And sometimes they have really amazing sales. Like when Emily and I were booking flights for our anniversary trip to New York City, The Southwest had a 40% off sale, even when using points.
Which I feel like they do that like two or three times a year. Yeah. They do that 40% off.
If you amass those points and you've got the Companion Pass and you're using those points to book travel, and then your spouse is flying free on top of that, you're basically getting a ton of free flights just by going with the Companion Pass way. So I guess it's an underrated way to utilize credit cards to travel hack. Like the Chase Sapphire Preferred and the Capital One Venture X get all the love, all the glory. And for good reason. They are two of the best travel credit cards out there in existence. Like, you honed in on the top two.
Yeah.
The other one, though, that gets not nearly as much attention is going the Southwest route.
Yeah, exactly. Don't sleep on the Southwest Companion Pass. And Dennis, don't feel like that you have to nail this perfectly. But even to just snag a free flight or a few nights of free awesome hotel is going to make a big difference when it comes to reducing the overall cost of that honeymoon. Mm-hmm. And it could be the beginning of you doing even more travel hacking to save money in the future. But we wish you the best. Happy honeymooning. Joel, we've got another question to get to. This is from a listener who has a new condo, but what's the best way of making those mortgage payments?
Hi, Matt and Joel. My name is Alexis. I use they, them pronouns, and I'm in Seattle, Washington. My wife and I just closed on our first condo, so I've got a question about mortgage payments. We have the option to set up biweekly payments, which I know would give us 2 extra mortgage payments per year. If we were planning on staying in this condo for the length of the loan, which is a 30-year fixed rate that we hope to be able to refinance at some point in the near future, I understand the difference this would make in paying the loan off faster and with less interest. However, given the fact that we almost certainly won't live here for the full 30 years, does this change the cost-benefit calculation at all, or is it still a good idea to make those extra payments if we can swing it? Thanks.
Oh, Matt, this is a great question. Alexis, thank you for sending this one our way, because this is, if you have a mortgage and you've taken one out recently, the dynamics have shifted about when or how you pay your mortgage off. Those 3% mortgages, Matt, they were so sweet. Mm-hmm. But they are a relic of a bygone era, at least at this point. Those super low rates are gone. And so for so long, our advice was like, don't pay off your mortgage early. Because if you have a 3% rate, unless you are one of those hyper debt averse people and you can't sleep at night because you have a mortgage, it was like, no, just let it linger because there are better things to do with your money. But the calculus looks different if your rate is in that 7% range. What the average rate on a new mortgage now has gone down a little bit, but it's still in that 6.5% range.
Still a lot higher. Yeah. If you do have a rate that high, definitely keep an eye on the market, like you mentioned, because refinancing, it can make a lot of sense if rates come down, like many folks are predicting. And if you're going to prepay your mortgage, those biweekly payments are just about the best way to do it. It's amazing how taking that route, making just one extra full payment, will knock off something like 6 years off the life of the loan. It's a pretty sweet reward decades down the road. And I'll say that the biweekly payments, so you're basically making a payment every 2 weeks, I love it.
Which is, then becomes the equivalent of essentially 13 payments a year instead of 12, which is what reduces.
Or biweekly, 26 payments, so extra couple of payments. So the reason I love it so much is the fact that oftentimes folks who have a W-2 job, they are also on a biweekly payment schedule. Mm-hmm. They're getting paid every other Friday, which means that that payment, that extra paycheck that they receive, kind of lines up perfectly with an extra payment towards a mortgage. And I love that because oftentimes when folks receive that extra payment, it gets absorbed into their monthly budget and it's not necessarily put to use. It gets frittered away almost into just like their expendable, just their expenses that month. Whereas now it's like, man, you have given it a task. You have assigned it to something that's going to lead to more money for you, higher net worth down the road.
Kind of like how people use their tax return money. It's like, oh, this is free money. I didn't have a plan for this. And wait, I'm getting a $3,500 refund this year. And it often gets frittered away too, Matt, because it is this, like, it's a great way to make a whole lot of progress at one time if you use it properly. But so many people don't use it that way. Mm-hmm. And that kind of, just prevents them from making more progress than they otherwise could.
Totally.
And let's talk about timeline for a second. That's really the heart of Alexis's question. The truth is, the average American takes out a 30-year mortgage, but doesn't come anywhere close to getting to the end of it. The average length of homeownership, it has like gone up a little bit in recent years, but it's something like 8 years in total that people who buy a house stay in that house. So if you don't plan to be in that condo for 30 years, your question is, does it even make sense to make mortgage payoff a priority, or should you be doing other things with that money? I would say it can make sense. Because let's say you opt to accelerate that mortgage payoff and you sell 12 years from now before you get that mortgage fully paid off. So you're staying there maybe a little bit longer than the average American, but you're not staying there the full life of the loan. Was that extra payoff, was all the extra money you threw towards that mortgage, was it all for naught? The answer is no, because at the closing table, you owe the bank a whole lot less than you would have if you had paid your mortgage as agreed. By accelerating that payoff, that means you get a bigger check cut to you when you make the sale.
That's
That means then more money to funnel into that next real estate purchase if that's the route you opt to take. But it is certainly not wasted just because you didn't own the home for the full life of the loan. You still made a lot of extra progress. You still owe less on that mortgage, which means you have more equity, which means you have more financial flexibility, whether it's through savings, whether it's through investing, or whether it's through paying off your mortgage early. Any of those avenues you take are going to put you on better financial footing.
Exactly. Yeah. So bottom line, if you don't end up staying there for 30 years, you're not flushing that money down the toilet.
Yeah.
And you mentioned refinancing. If you just decide to do that at some point, you're now refinancing a smaller loan balance, which is awesome as well. So there's definitely not a downside to taking the biweekly payment approach. But the only other thing we'd want you and your wife to consider, Alexis, is whether or not there are going to be more productive places to put that money. Again, this isn't as easy considering you've got a larger mortgage interest rate, and we totally understand wanting to take the bird in hand approach, the known quantity of paying off that debt with an perhaps uncomfortable interest rate attached. But if paying off that mortgage more quickly means that you're going to be missing out on, let's say, a 401k match, well, that's when this is a bad idea. But if you are already making big strides on the tax advantage retirement accounts front, well, this is a way to maybe balance your scales a little bit by paying off some debt And a lot of it comes down to what lights you up, what maybe gets you the most excited. Because on one hand, do you really love the idea of paying less every single month for your housing? If so, then shoot, maybe paying off the mortgage sooner than later is the best route for you to take. If you like the idea of investing more of your dollars, then well, shoot, maybe it makes sense to keep that mortgage around. You actually didn't state your specific interest rate. And so much of it kind of comes down to what you feel the most comfortable with. Yeah. Because you're kind of right in that zone. I'm guessing, I don't know, maybe you're in that 6% range somewhere within there, where any higher than that, we would probably say, yeah, you'd most definitely probably want to eliminate that as quickly as possible.
If it was 8%, it changes.
Yeah, if it's 8%, certainly higher than that, yes, get rid of, pay as much down on that mortgage as possible. But honestly, if it was in like the fours or fives, like I probably wouldn't prioritize. And I say fours because I've got a mortgage in the 4% range, and I'm definitely not paying that thing off early. And so some of it comes down to what it is that you are most excited about. Like, I think one of those or the other is going to make you happier as you think about what to do with additional money that you've got.
I think that's a good point. I think the plan that you're most likely to follow through on because it most excites you is probably going to be best for you. This is kind of a can't lose situation, I think.
Yep,
exactly. Because if you stick a little more in your 401k or your Roth IRA, or you pay down your 6%+ mortgage rate debt more quickly, honestly, you can't lose either way. So, I love where your head's at, Alexis. Best of luck as you move forward. Curious to hear how you proceed, what action you decide to take. Feel free to reach out to us and let us know. Matt, we've got a couple more questions to get to, including one about buying a drastically discounted electric car from a rental car company. Does that make sense? We'll talk about that and more right after this. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simons on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
All right, we're back from the break, and we'll talk about Hertz car rentals here in a minute, but let's take our Facebook question of the week. And Joel, this one is from Scott, and he says, hey, how do money peeps? Just wondering what the consensus is on the best way to save money for my two young children. Is a 529 the best option? Can it only be used for higher education? Any and all feedback is greatly appreciated, and I'm sure there's an episode on this, but I haven't listened in a while since my commute is not nearly as long as it used to be. Scott, first off, I'll just say congrats on the shorter commute, because I would say the best part of a long commute is being able to listen to a bunch of awesome podcasts or audiobooks. Joel, over the weekend, I started listening to The Martian. Oh. Did I talk about Project Hail Mary?
You've told me it was great.
Andy Weir. Fantastic. I would say if you are interested in sci-fi, start with The Martian, because okay. Project Hail Mary is so good. The Martian is good, not nearly as good. But the ability to, enjoy some of that audio listening, some of that.
That's the best part about a long road trip. Yeah,
it's great. But even still, I would take a short commute
Same.
If given the choice. And we've talked about all the different ways that reducing your commute time is actually beneficial, including there is a recent study that found that a person with a 1-hour commute has to earn 40% more money in order to be satisfied with life as someone who walks to the office. And then I think it was a Swedish study that found that folks who endure more than a 45-minute commute were evidently 40% more likely to divorce. So, Scott, I'm not sure your situation, but I think going for the shorter commute, that's probably, it's going to be a win-win scenario.
Even if it means a little less how to money in your life. Yeah, exactly. I think so. It's going to keep your marriage intact. It's going to keep you happier. Let's talk about 529 plans, though, Matt, and the best options to save money for your kids. We've actually got an in-depth article on the site that we'll link to in the show notes if you're kind of trying to figure out, well, what's the best way to save for my offspring. But 529 plans, they have always been a solid option to help you save and invest for college costs for your children. But like you alluded to, Scott, back in the day, they could only be used for higher education purposes. If your kid didn't go to college, that 529 plan wasn't nearly as useful as you hoped it would be, and that left a lot of people in the lurch. Well, we've talked about this before many times on the show now, but they're even better now, 529 plans are, thanks to the Secure Act 2.0 and the increased flexibility that law change allowed to 529 plans. We really do like 529 plans a lot more than we used to because of this singular change that allows unspent 529 plan dollars to be put into a Roth IRA for your kids, up to $35,000, which is impressive. So make sure you know the details, like the 15-year rule and the 5-year rule. Basically, the account has to have been open for 15 years, and you can't funnel money from the 529 into the Roth if it was put in just over the last 5. But 529 plans can be one of the best choices to help your kids save for his or her future, not just for his or her college, but really for their retirement. And so, Matt, I know when I saw that kind of new loophole about 529 plans, I was thrilled. It made me way more inclined to stick more of my investment dollars in that direction, because I think it's going to help give my kids a leg up on investing for their future.
Yeah, that's right. Assuming they don't use all that money to pay for college.
Yeah.
But another option too, Scott, is to don't forget to help your child fund a Roth IRA directly. This is something you can do. You can do this directly with money that you've been saving in your own high-yield savings account. The catch, though, is you can't do this until they actually have a job. They need to have earned income. But let's say they start working at age 14 or 15. Well, that's a great way to help them to save. And it's a great way for you to teach them about investing at the same time. And I would also try to maybe incentivize them. Because in this way, it kind of mirrors reality. But it's like, hey, for every dollar you stick in, I'll also stick in a dollar as well. Obviously, not exceeding the amount that they actually earned that year. And so just simple, basic Roth IRAs. Don't forget about those.
Yeah.
Accounts we don't often talk about here on the show are UGMA or UTMA accounts. That's Uniform Gift or Uniform Transfer to Minors Act. But those are another way to go. And the reason we don't talk about those is because there are other superior accounts that make a whole lot more sense to us.
The ones we just talked about, like the 529 and then the 529 to Roth and then
exactly
the Roth Direct. Like, there are better ways to go about getting money into your kids' hands.
Yeah. But that being said, I love that you're trying to think about how to help those kiddos to succeed financially. But then also don't forget to model the right behavior. Don't forget to include them in some of these different money discussions that you might be having, because I think that helps just as much as the actual dollars that you set aside for them. It's the old teaching a man how to fish versus giving them a fish. You saving those dollars and putting them aside for them, that gives them the fish.
Yeah.
But you want to also be able to teach them how to go out there and catch their own fish.
And I think sometimes when you're of this kind of mindset, and you might be hyper frugal, hyper intentional about investing. You may be more analytical on the analytical side of things.
You're focusing on the numbers.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you might,
as opposed to behavior,
you might actually be doing a great job at saving, helping them save for their future. But if you're not simultaneously teaching them, are they going to be able to continue those habits? And so that's really something you want to pay attention to. I'm glad you brought that up.
Deaf. Yeah.
All right. We had one final listener question we wanted to get to. This one came actually in email form this past week. Listener Mauricio, he sent us an article with the question, frugal or cheap? It was a basic email, but the article was, Hertz is selling its fleet of rental Tesla Model 3s for cheap. And Matt, I was like curious to hear your take on this because it's true. We like you dig in. There's been a number of stories written about this at this point, and the price point on some of these used Teslas being sold from Hertz is pretty impressive.
Yeah, so Hertz, they're selling off a bunch of the Teslas that they purchased, basically one third of their EVs in total, including 2021 Tesla models for less than $21,000. And
wow.
So this is just another sign that EV adoption and EV demand is slowing a bit.
By the way, we like EVs, so
yeah.
we're not like cheering this because we think EVs are awesome. I drove one for 6 years, but it is interesting to see that maybe production outpaced demand for the time being.
Bottom line, if you're in the market for a used EV, this really might be the sale that you're looking for. And I think it's at least worth doing some browsing at like CarMax, Carvana, AutoTrader, and seeing if these prices are significantly better. The article, did you say where it was from? It's from Jalopnik. But from what they found and everything we've seen, that this discount is pretty dang incredible.
Yeah, I looked up prices on Carvana and CarMax. And these prices from Hertz were a whole lot better than what I was seeing at those places. And the truth is, Matt, because of the $4,000 tax credit that's available for used EV purchases, that's another like check mark in the box of like, hey, this might make a whole lot of sense for people. We're talking about buying one of these used Teslas for potentially in the $17,000 range.
So what do you think, frugal or cheap?
So I'm going to say it's frugal, I think. And
yeah.
And I guess like the another thing to talk about here is a lot of people are worried about buying a used rental car. Like, hey, maybe this thing has been used and abused, kind of like, you know, it's alluded to in movies and television shows all the time. There's the Seinfeld episode where they don't keep his reservation or whatever, and he's like, oh, I'm gonna use this rental car now. You know, like, and that's kind of how I think a lot of people perceive it. But I don't know, when I drive a rental car, I'm not driving it any differently. And the thing is, a lot of these rental car companies have a pretty strict maintenance schedule. So
they're probably taken care of better than a lot of the vehicles out there on the road, because it's literally on their job to maintain these vehicles.
I trust Hertz to do the oil change more than I do my neighbor to do their oil change if I'm buying the car from them. So I don't know. I guess if the price is that superior, I would still get it checked out. I would still make sure
that's what it comes down
the
to.
Car is in good condition. Yeah. I wouldn't change any of the tactics that I would use when it comes to buying a car, and I wouldn't just trust Hertz or any rental car company implicitly. But I will say, man, the price point is pretty compelling on some of these used electric vehicles that they're selling off. And if you're in the market and you want to pay as little as possible, and you know you're driving a lot and you're going to save a ton on gas costs because you just finally make the EV upgrade, this could be the exact way to go about it.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, I would. So I have no qualms with buying a vehicle from a car that used to be a rental or used to be part of a rental fleet, because that's literally exactly what we did. It's the one vehicle that we have. It's a 2012 Honda Odyssey. And it used to be part of what rental it was with, but down in Florida, if you look at the Carfax on it, like that's where it was. And it was a part of a fleet. And so for me, the reassurance came because of the fact that I was buying it from Carvana, and they've got that 7-day return window. So I knew I could drive it around. I could try it out. Even though I had purchased it sight unseen, I got a whole week to drive that bad boy around, to go take it to a mechanic that only works on Hondas and Acuras. And during that period of time, I was able to find that, oh, actually, this is something that's going to need to be repaired. And guess what? Carvana paid for that repair to take place. And so much of it comes down to the ability to, A, get it checked out ahead of time. And then, B, if you aren't able to, what's the return policy? Mm-hmm. I say Carvana's got 7 days. CarMax, isn't it 30 days?
It's 30.
You have an entire month to see if this car is going to work out for you.
We almost bought our van via CarMax. I finally was able to find one locally via AutoTrader. But I literally had one shipped from Nashville via CarMax for $99. I just lost $99 because then I found something better locally.
Boom.
But yeah, and part of the compelling reason to shop there, even though the prices can be a little more elevated, which is why I wanted to buy it locally, is because of that 30-day return window. And I felt really comfortable knowing, like, cool, if it gets here, here, and this car van isn't in the shape that it looks like it's purported to be online, I can always just be like, eh, cool, I'm turning it back in, not interested anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, okay, one last thing. I think there might be some folks who are thinking, well, that's just our traditional combustion gasoline-powered engine, boys. What about the fact that these are EVs? And I did a little bit of research, and it turns out that superchargers, like we all think that superchargers degrade batteries, but evidently there is zero statistical relevance to the fact that supercharging degrades batteries.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, I'm shocked.
Yeah, this is fairly new research.
Yeah, I would have spouted that ignorant.
I think I always felt the same way too, because it's like a nice slow trickle,
yeah,
as opposed to zapping it with the supercharger. You do want to avoid supercharging it if you're all the way down to zero, and you don't want to supercharge it and like have it sit above 90%, like all the way up to 100, mm-hmm, because evidently that degrades the battery. But bottom line, we've got over a decade's worth of research now from Teslas that have been on the road. And there is like some small differences, but it goes back and forth as to whether or not supercharging actually comes out ahead versus it degrading the battery. And so, yes, my natural instinct is that like, oh, yeah, but you wouldn't want to get an EV that was part of a fleet because they're probably likely always supercharging those bad boys. But bottom line, even if they were, it doesn't seem like it really matters all that much.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So, all right. So basically Mauricio, he's like, hey, is this frugal? Cheap, Matt. I said it's frugal.
Yeah. Frugal, baby, all the way.
All right. Yeah, so it's funny because I think if you'd asked me 5 years ago, too, oh, what about buying a car from a rental car company? How would you feel about that? And I think until I did the research and looked into how these companies take care of their cars, I would have said, oh, that sounds like a bad idea. But the more you look into it, you're like, wait a second, probably not. Like, they're not. I'd still rather buy probably from the grandma down the street who drives 6,000 miles in a year than a rental car company. But I don't think it's a bad idea, and it's not nearly as dumb as it might appear on the surface.
Exactly. It's more of like an emotional barrier versus anything else. Because guess what? That grandma that drives 6,000 a year might only change her oil once every 3 years.
That's
so that's not something that you necessarily want.
I want the receipts, grandma. All right. Let me look in the dash. What you got? How can you get that oil change?
Prove it.
All right, Matt. Let's get back to the beer we had on this episode. This one's called Nelson. It's by Piedmont Brewery. We actually picked these up in person in November. We haven't gotten around to drinking them until now, but this was
too many other beers to get to.
Yeah, this is a brewery down in Macon, Georgia that we randomly stumbled upon.
Wait, did we share the fact that we got these beers after we went and saw Disney on Ice with listener Adrian?
I think we did mention that.
Did we give her a shout out?
Yeah.
Okay.
So she was kind enough to reach out and offer both of our families tickets to come see her and her husband.
She listens to the show.
The rest of the crew perform.
That was so cool.
It was super fun. Our kids had a blast. I had a blast too. Mm-hmm. And then so we went to this awesome brewery
afterwards.
Yeah. And the food was great. The beers were great. What are your thoughts on this beer?
This one in particular, man. Yeah. So this is a Nelson. This is an IPA for the best boy is the little tagline. It's got, I guess,
it's like got man's best friend. A nice
golden retriever on there. Super cute. But this is such a great beer. I think, and we've kind of mentioned this on recent episodes, but the Nelson hop totally has it going on. It's got it's got the green hoppy funkiness. Not even funky, but it's a bit more dank than some of the other hops, less bitter, less pithy. So it's got less of that grapefruit West Coast hop profile going on. And it's more, it's like an all-American IPA.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to describe it. It's really stinking good.
All right. So
nice and bright as well.
Yeah. I remember having it on draft at the brewery, and we were like literally sitting there on the essentially Macon Town Square. And it was, back before Christmas, all the lights were up on the square. It was a beautiful setting. And this beer tastes just as good in the can
a month
and a half later as it did on draft.
So I think we were a little nervous because we kind of sat on this one for a little bit.
Yeah.
And a lot of times with IPAs, the fresher, the better when it comes to the flavor. But this one, it's still holds out.
And I was like, this is small town Georgia, kind of.
Macon's not a big town.
No. But this brewery, pumping out some great stuff, worthy of some of like to rival some of the bigger city beers for sure.
Yeah.
So
craft beers come a long way where you can just stumble upon just a random brewery in a small town and have some really tasty stuff.
It's true. All right, that's going to do it for this episode. Again, if you have a money question you want Matt and I to tackle, we'd love to hear it. Just go to howtomoney.com/ask for the simple instructions to submit your question for an upcoming episode. And of course, if you have not signed up for the How to Money newsletter, what are you doing? Please sign up at howtomoney.com/newsletter. It is free, it is encouraging, and hopefully incredibly helpful every single week, every Tuesday morning coming into your inbox. But Matt, that's going to do it for this episode. Until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.